some in a moment. Michael Rivero joins us back on Coast to Coast. We'll talk about what really happened next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got a couple of great hours here for you. Michael Rivero back on Coast to Coast. Launched whatreallyhappened.com back in 1993, and until late August of 2010, he ran What Really Happened radio show on the GCN network. That was 6 days a week. He's still with Genesis Communications Network. He's been a frequent public affairs guest on our friend Alex Jones's show. Was with me almost 2 years ago. Michael, time flies, my friend. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me again.
There are so many things I want to talk with you about tonight, but I do want to get your take on this incredible situation that's happening in the Middle East, where all these refugees are just flocking to Europe, and some of them now will come to the United States. What's your overall thought on this, Michael?
Well, obviously, we're looking at the largest refugee crisis since World War II, and it's not like a switch was thrown, because there was already an immigration issue that was causing a lot of friction in the European Union. Certainly here in the United States of America, there's been a great deal of controversy over the Mexicans, Nicaraguans, Costa Ricans who are coming into this country, all this talk about amnesty, and it's caused a lot of resentment in the indigenous populations. Anywhere that this is happening, it is overstressing the existing infrastructure, the economy. We don't have enough jobs for our own legal citizens in this country, and yet we have all these people coming in from the Mexican border. Now we're having another group coming in from, well, basically all these countries that have been torn up by U.S. wars, drone strikes, and so forth. And we understand that these people have to go somewhere, but it does seem to be spinning out of control. And I think the U.S. government may be trying to take advantage of the situation, because they have been trying to get Bashar al-Assad out of Syria for almost 4 years now, and they haven't been able to do it. And I think the U.S. is exploiting the refugee crisis to try and get Europe to go along with the idea of partitioning Syria and creating a safe haven for the Syrian people to go back to their homes in, which coincidentally sits over all the oil, and they'll let Assad keep this little splinter over there by Damascus. And I think that may be a big part of what's going on there. And even beyond that, we know that there's a group of individuals, if you will, who are pushing this agenda for a single global government and a single global private central bank. And obviously, before they can convince the people of planet Earth to go along with a global government, they have to blur our sense of a national or regional or cultural identity. And so we're seeing all this mixing going on, trying to basically turn the human race into this jumble of all nationalities and all races and all cultures and all religions blurred together, so that we lose our sense of that national identity. And going along with that, of course, they stopped teaching early American history in schools. They banned the Confederate flag. They banned the Gadsden flag, to try and sort of erase that sense we have of who we are, mm-hmm. in order to replace it with this new global government that they want to sell to us.
Gosh, Michael, I feel sorry for all these people, you know, fleeing. Germany's getting tough again, saying for urgent security measures, they're going to stop for a while. Something's going on here.
Well, you know, it's rather ironic. This huge influx of refugees going into Europe has caused a lot of nations to start putting the borders back up again. And part of the European Union's image was this internal open borders policy. You can go from Spain to Portugal to France to England without having to go through a border checkpoint. Now they're putting them back up. And even more than the economic crisis coming out of Greece, this refugee crisis could actually be the beginning of the splintering of the European Union.
Now, the Russians are moving tanks into Syria. Are we going to have some direct conflict here?
Well, I would certainly hope not, but you need to remember a couple of points. In theory, Russia is on our side against ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria, and so therefore there shouldn't be a conflict. The other thing to keep in mind, of course, is that Syria has asked Russia for help against ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Syria has not asked for the United States to come in and just bomb everything that moves. Now, again, the U.S. goal is to get Assad out of Syria, and they're using the presence of ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria as an excuse to basically carry out acts of war against a nation which has done nothing to us. And Putin has very cleverly turned that propaganda on its head by saying, okay, if you're in Syria to get ISIS and Al-Qaeda, we'll come in and help you. And, of course, the U.S. reaction was, no, please don't do that. Don't come in here. We've really got it under control. And, you know, they're in a corner of their own making. And earlier today, Germany actually issued a statement that they are going to move away from the U.S. anti-Russia agenda, and they're going to join this global coalition against ISIS and Al-Qaeda that Russia is proposing. France is doing the same. And obviously these nations will really go after ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Whereas the U.S. needs them to stay where they are because that's the little straw man they've put up there to say, oh, we're not really making war on Syria. We're not really making war on Iraq. We're going after those really icky-poo evil terrorists. And it's a big fake, and Putin has called their bluff, and now they're really stuck because, again, Syria asked Russia to come in and help deal with this terrorist crisis. And the U.S. really does not have anything that they can say about it.
And, Michael, so many people are confused because it is ISIS in Syria that's trying to get Assad out. So we basically support that measure, that push, even though we don't support ISIS. And then we definitely don't support ISIS in Iraq. How do you know who the players are here?
Well, it has gotten very, very confusing, but one thing is very obvious, and that is that the U.S. is definitely using ISIS and Al-Qaeda to get Assad, and it's become so obvious. Even Donald Trump was out there saying, you know, it almost looks like the U.S. is trying to protect ISIS, and Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov came out earlier today saying, we know the U.S. knows where the ISIS bases are, but they never bomb them. They're always bombing Syrian troops and Syrian facilities and oil refineries, and it's very obvious that ISIS is sort of serving the same purpose for the U.S. that Emmanuel Goldstein did for the evil dictatorship in George Orwell's 1984. It's a made-up enemy. We're all supposed to hate them. Everything bad is blamed on them, and everything the government has to do to the people is justified because we have to defeat Emmanuel Goldstein. We have to defeat ISIS. We have to defeat Al-Qaeda. And yet there's a great deal of fakery and fraud behind much of this.
Let's take a look at the presidential election and get your take on some of these candidates here. First of all, the surging Donald Trump. Where'd this come from?
It came from exactly the same place that took Jeremy Corbyn into the leadership of Britain's Labour Party by the widest margin ever in British history. The people of the world are sick and tired of the establishment, pre-manufactured, pre-approved by Wall Street or the financial centers candidates. They're tired of austerity. They're tired of always trying to placate certain foreign powers. And they're looking for anybody but the establishment. And I see this next year. There's going to be a tremendous anti-incumbency fever. And it's catching a lot of people by surprise. It's almost funny to look at what the British corporate media and the British government are saying about Corbyn's victory. They're very unhappy about it. The British Israel lobby had just vowed they were going to make sure Corbyn was never elected, so they got handed a major political embarrassment. And it does feel like a lot of the old guard, the status quo, are all of a sudden aware that their names on their office doors may be written with dry erase marker right now.
Yet it seems to me, too, that Hillary's campaign is imploding, Michael. How about you?
Well, very, very much so, and I'm very glad to see it. And part of it, of course, is Hillary's personality is very abrasive. She's carrying more political baggage than Kim Kardashian on a photo shoot. Everybody is remembering the cattle futures trades, the travel office firings, and especially the way that Hillary went after the victims of Bill Clinton's sexual assaults. Has sent a clear message to women and even feminists that Hillary really is not on their side on these issues. And then on top of it, of course, you've got this horrible email scandal, which at the very most generous shows a tremendous degree of recklessness. There's obviously a cover-up. One of the bits of news that came out today is both the Judicial Watch and the State Department are confirming that the emails Hillary turned over to them have large time gaps in them. One of the gaps is a month long. Nobody is going to believe that Hillary Rodham Clinton didn't conduct State Department business for an entire month, and that opens her up to a charge of perjury for having said, I have given you all of the official business emails. Now, Hillary is still trying to maintain that the emails she got were not classified when she got them. The intelligence experts are saying no, much of what she had was classified the moment of creation, and Hillary, as Secretary of State, does not have the authority to declassify them. Now, if somebody stripped off those marks saying classified information on those emails, that in and of itself is another felony. So it is a serious, serious situation. Everybody is looking at Hillary, Bob, and Weave. Now, Hillary is approaching this problem the way a lawyer would, but politics is perception. And the perception is that Hillary has got something to hide, and the scandal may be even far worse than we're even aware of right now. And I say that because back in 1996, there was another scandal, and that was when Bill Clinton was running for re-election. And he authorized the transfer of highly sensitive technology to China. The technology had military applications that allowed China to close the gap in missile performance with the United States. The transfers were opposed and criticized by the Defense Department, but Bill Clinton said, no, it's okay, we're going to let them buy this stuff. At the same time, Bill Clinton was getting donations for his re-election campaign from the U.S. companies that were allowed to sell the technology to China and from American citizens of Chinese.
Go figure, Michael. We're going to come back. We'll talk more with Michael Rivero. WhatReallyHappened.com on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll open up the phone lines next hour. Michael Rivera with us. Michael, let's move off of politics for a moment. I want to get your take on this Iranian situation and the nuke deal. It is so bizarre. I mean, every place I look, an Iranian leader is saying death to America, death to Israel. How could they be doing this in the midst of this agreement?
Well, George, would you mind if I finished my comment about the Hillary email server? Because I think there's a big scandal, an even bigger scandal behind the server itself, and I'd like to talk about that.
We'll come back to it.
All right, fine. Well, the Iranian situation, first of all, you need to understand the people in Iran saying death to America are the people who were there in 1953 when the Central Intelligence Agency overthrew Iran's elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh and imposed a puppet ruler, the Shah of Iran, who impoverished Iran by selling Iran's oil to American and British oil companies at below market rates, and anybody who complained was tortured by the Shah's secret police, the Savak. And the Iranians put up with it until 1979 when they kicked their U.S. puppet ruler out and set their country up the way they wanted to set it up. Now, obviously, the United States is not happy when a puppet-ruled country breaks away. They've been trying to get back in there. There was a failed attempt at another coup d'etat in 2009. Israel's agenda regarding Iran is they want to smash up a regional rival the way they did with Iraq. Certainly, the private central banking concerns want to bring Iran under the private central bank model because it's not there. And the U.S. wants Iran's oil to be on the world market only for the U.S. dollar in order to prop up the petrodollar arrangement and keep everybody in the world having to come to the United States and get U.S. dollars before they can buy natural resources or conduct trade and business across borders.
Okay, but the rhetoric, that's my concern. Why is it happening? Why are they spouting all this?
Well, you need to be very careful about what you're being told Iran is saying because there is a huge amount of propaganda going on. I'll give you just one example. There is a group called MEMRI, the Middle East Media Research Institute, which provides free translations of Arabic media to the Western press. And MEMRI has been outed as an intelligence front for the Mossad, and their translations are very often skewed, deceptive, and flawed. One very well-known example of that, of course, was the claim that Ahmadinejad had said he was going to wipe Israel off the map. And people who actually speak the language listened to Ahmadinejad's speech and said, no, that's not what he said. What he said was, Israel will eventually vanish from the pages of history, which is a far more passive kind of a comment. So we have to be very, very careful because there's a lot of propaganda to try and convince us that Iran is the bad guy. And history is against that because Iran has not invaded another country in a war of aggression in over 200 years. That's a claim that neither the United States or Israel can make. Now, Iran has signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Everything that they're doing is allowed under that treaty. Israel has never signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. We know they have nuclear weapons. John McCain the other day was saying he was delighted Israel had nuclear weapons, but Israel won't sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty or allow IAEA inspections. Israel got caught trying to sell a nuclear weapon to the former government of South Africa, the very activity the Non-Proliferation Treaty is supposed to prevent. And so you have Israel breaking all the rules, pointing fingers at Iran that's trying to play by the rules, saying they're the bad guys, go hurt them, go hurt them.
Where's it going to end?
I hope it's going to end with Israel getting tired and just giving up, because I'm very concerned if we really get into this new world war that so many people seem to think will serve their agendas, it's inevitable it will go nuclear, and that's going to be a bad day for everybody.
I agree. And I have to admit, I don't speak Farsi. All I see is the subtitles underneath the Ayatollah that say exactly what we've been talking about, death to America, death with Israel, but somebody's putting those subtitles up.
That's exactly right. And the idea of deliberate mistranslations is hardly new to this age. We were seeing it during World War II. It's a common propaganda technique to convince people that somebody is saying something very bad when, in point of fact, it's not what they said at all.
All right, back to the server, Hillary's server. I mean, why all the furor over these, you know, emails?
Well, because, again, to be the most generous, it was a very, very reckless thing for her to do, and it's certainly not a quality you want to have in a potential president, but Hillary doesn't do things casually. Now, we need to step back and understand that nobody even knew there was a private email server until Congress started looking into what happened at the consulate in Benghazi, and the State Department started sending over all the emails regarding that, and the first thing they noticed is Hillary Clinton was not using her official U.S. government email address, and at that point she said, well, I set up a private server, it's no big deal, it's perfectly legal. But there, I don't think this is just a casual thing. I think there's a deliberate thinking going on in Hillary's mind, and as I mentioned before we went to the commercial break, we have a precedent for what may be going on, and I'll say right up front, this is speculation, but there's a precedent. In 1996, when Bill Clinton was running for re-election, he authorized the sale of very sensitive technology to China, technology that previously was not allowed for export. It had military applications and allowed China to close the gap in military missile performance with the United States, and the Defense Department, Pentagon, were very opposed to this. At the same time, huge donations began to pour into Bill Clinton's re-election campaign from the U.S. companies allowed to sell the technology to China and from American citizens of Chinese descent. Now, because they were U.S. citizens, it was legal for them to donate to a political campaign, mm-hmm. but it later came out that they were acting as conduits for cash coming from Asian sources, including Chinese intelligence agencies. The scandal was known as Chinagate. Now, this establishes a precedent of the Clintons treating U.S. secrets as their own personal property and selling them to raise money for campaigns. Now, present day, we have Hillary's private email server built by a company that would never have passed the security clearance mandated by her own husband's presidential executive order. It had weaker security than the Ashley Madison website, at least one known, totally open subdomain, no encryption, and completely outside the control and monitoring systems of the U.S. government, on which are parked many of the nation's most closely guarded secrets. Now, we know some of that material already got out, was printed on Russia Today, published some of the letters. Now, paired with that weak email server, we have this so-called charitable foundation owned by the Clintons, which actually doesn't do a lot of charitable work. Being a charitable foundation, it's legally allowed to accept donations from foreign sources, and roughly 40% of the cash that has poured into the Clinton Foundation has come from foreign sources. Some of them are concealed.
And where does the cash go once it gets in?
Well, the Clintons can spend it on whatever it is that they feel like spending it on. But you need to understand, it's already been established that a lot of these donations came from countries which later received favorable treatment from Hillary Clinton's State Department, enough where Larry Klayman filed a RICO lawsuit against the foundation. Unfortunately, that lawsuit was thrown out of court by a Clinton-appointed judge who refused to recuse himself over the obvious conflict of interest. But you've got the weak email server as a system for delivering secrets, the charitable foundation, an easy means of accepting and laundering payments. This is a perfect spy setup. And this could be the biggest spy scandal in U.S. history, a perfect espionage operation running out of the U.S. State Department with the weak email server providing the secrets and a charitable foundation to accept and launder the payments.
Is this going to haunt her, Michael, right through the primary?
It should put her right in jail if that's what comes out. But Hillary doesn't have to physically steal the files the way Jonathan Pollard did. Hillary doesn't have to scratch an X on a mailbox the way Aldrich Ames did. Hillary doesn't have to tape bundles of stolen documents underneath the Park Bridge like Robert Hansen did. And I think there may be, behind this email server, an even bigger scandal, which, you know, obviously nobody's going to want that to come on out, and they're going to try and keep the focus just on the server. But I think if I were in charge of counterintelligence, I would be taking a very good look at what secrets were on her server and where they went. We already know she wasn't being careful with them because she sent classified information to Sidney Blumenthal, who was not cleared to receive it. She gave copies of all the classified emails to her lawyer, David Kendall, who was not cleared to receive them. That's a violation of the Espionage Act.
Good point. Good point. So as we look at all of this, then you have someone like Bernie Sanders coming through. Is he going to get the nomination?
I doubt it seriously. I think the Democrats are beginning to panic because their presumed candidate is in the process of self-destructing. There's a lot of pressure on Biden to step in. He's making all the moves as if he's going to step in.
I don't know if his heart's in it, though.
Well, he's already said his heart really isn't in it, but he may be prevailed upon to do it for the good of the party and the good of the nation. You know, Harry Truman really didn't want to be Roosevelt's vice president, but he did it out of a sense of duty.
Yeah.
But the Democrats are looking for a plan B. Bernie Sanders is doing surprisingly well. And again, this gets on back to the idea that in this coming election, the non-professional politicians are, across the board, doing much better than the people who are seen as part of this corrupt establishment.
Michael, I'm sure you've been watching and looking at and also reporting on with the whatreallyhappened.com, this talk about something major happening in September, the seven-year cycle, the Shemitah, and so many other things. People are predicting with the blood moon coming up the end of the month that something horrendous is going to happen. What do you think?
Well, it's hard to do accurate prognostication because when we're out here trying to analyze what's going on, we're basically having to work within the existing set of rules and procedures that government and banks and corporate media follow. The problem is that they can change the rules whenever they want. They've got these money printing presses to keep things going. So while I am absolutely convinced that ultimately the U.S. government is going to follow the Soviet Union into the dustbin of history, saying exactly when it's going to happen, it's really very difficult to do.
Okay, but there is talk that the economy is really not as robust as they say, that it could go at any time, and I'm beginning to hear little things like that.
Yeah, well, that is absolutely true. We know that everything the government is saying is trying to reassure us everything is just fine, that if we'll just go along with the flow a little bit longer, we'll all be okay. But we know that the current claim of a 5.1% unemployment rate is an absolute total joke because there are 94 million Americans willing and able to work in this country, but they're not counted as unemployed because they're no longer receiving benefits, and many of them have simply quit looking for work. So the government hides them off in a separate category so they can come up with this, you know, 5.1% number that looks really good going into an election year. We know there's been massive manipulation of the stock market by the plunge protection team. Every day it almost seems there's another bank or another financial firm exposed with massive fraud, rigging the LIBOR, rigging the gold and silver prices. Wall Street and the American financial situation are basically an illusion being held together with duct tape and bailing wire, and any one major significant crisis could cause it to unravel very, very quickly.
Well, I think so, too. So, Michael, as you look at everything that you have looked at over the past couple of years, what for you is the most pressing issue we have?
For me, the most pressing issue is that our government seems to be trying to get a major bloody global war with military peers going simply to have something on which to blame the economic crash. Because if the economy implodes and they don't have somebody to blame for it, the American people are going to point their fingers at Wall Street and Washington, D.C. as the cause of the economic meltdown, and of course, they'll be absolutely right. But I think Washington is thinking if they can get a major war going with Russia or China or both, that they can just pass the blame over to them. Oh, we were on the verge of turning the economy around, but those gosh darn Ruskies and those Chinese, they spoiled it for all of us, because that's what the U.S. government did the last two times the economy was on the edge of a collapse. Crash of 1907, get into World War I. Crash of 1929, get into World War II. Crash of 2008, and look how many countries the United States has invaded, drone struck, or overthrown in the last 13 years.
We can't afford to fight Russia and China. We can't do it.
No, we can't. And part of the problem is that the military-industrial complex in this country, the weapons production is all about making money, whereas in China and Russia, they make weapons to make good, cost-effective weapons, and they get much more bang for their buck. We're hearing all these horror stories about American weapon systems. The F-22 still asphyxiating its pilots. The F-35, the helmet control fire system still does not work. The software for the cannon isn't available. They had problems getting it to land on the carrier. The Gerald Ford, the new carrier, all of its whiz-bang electromagnetic rail guns, they still can't get them to work. The Independence-class littoral combat ships started corroding as soon as they went into the ocean. Apparently, somebody forgot what zinc sacrificial anodes are for on ship construction. And they're hideously expensive, and they're really not very good. And I don't think the U.S. can win conventional wars against either Russia or China, and that means at some point, before they admit defeat and capitulation, they'll start turning those little keys in the missile silos, and that's going to be a bad day for anybody not wearing 2 million sunblock.
Do you really think somebody would launch?
Yeah, I really do, because we're seeing signs of severe mental stress and poor quality thinking coming out of Washington, D.C. Remember, it really only takes two people to start the nuclear attack from the side of the United States of America. And, you know, if they're all on prescription antidepressants, we're really in a world of hurt, because nobody in D.C. seems to be thinking very clearly.
Well, let's hope they are.
That's actually a plus for us, because one of the reasons they're in such trouble is they've turned over the propaganda campaign to advertising agencies and public relations firms, which by their very nature only think in terms of 30 seconds, 60 seconds, maybe a two-week sales campaign, and they're off on the next one. And because of that, there's no threat of continuity in U.S. propaganda. There's no coherent, consistent, alternate reality that anybody can believe. We often see the propaganda contradicting itself. And because of that, even on a gut level, the American people are realizing we're not being told the truth about almost anything. We all remember the huge whopper about Saddam's nuclear weapons. And people are looking back in history and they're remembering all the times we were lied to start a war. Torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin, Spanish mine in Havana Harbor, Lusitania not carrying weapons. And after a while, when you're lied to as many times as we are, you start to realize and accept, yes, we are being lied to by our government all the time.
What about the JFK assassination? You have to throw that in there, too.
Yeah, absolutely would have to throw that in there. And what's really interesting about that is all the people talking about the JFK assassination, they've missed one critical aspect about it.
What was that?
And that is John F. Kennedy's signing of Executive Order 11110. Because John F. Kennedy understood that when you have a privately owned central bank issuing all the public currency as a loan at interest, debt is piling up faster than the available money supply. And Kennedy wanted to get us away from that. So he issued about $4 billion in United States notes that were based on the silver remaining in Fort Knox. And this was $4 billion circulating through the American society. And back in the 1960s, $4 billion was really a lot of money. And the Federal Reserve was not getting interest on it, and they saw it as a major threat to their continued debt enslavement of the country. And, of course, Kennedy was killed just 5 months after signing Executive Order 11110. And on the Warren Commission sat John J. McCloy, president of the Chase Manhattan Bank, president of the World Bank. Now, I don't care how good a banker he is. Okay, he's not qualified to investigate the murder of a president, therefore he had to be there to make sure the links between Kennedy's assassination and the financial system remained hidden.
I've always heard that that was a distinct possibility.
Well, something that people need to remember is that assassinations and wars never happen for just one reason. You have to get a group of people together, each of who are after their own particular agenda.
Who benefits?
But it's all solved by that same war or assassination. Israel wanted Kennedy gone because he was blocking their access to nuclear weapons. The Texas oil billionaires wanted Kennedy gone because of the oil depletion allowance. CIA wanted him gone because of the Bay of Pigs. Organized crime wanted him gone because they felt he'd betrayed them by sicking his brother Robert Kennedy on them. And of course, the Federal Reserve wanted him gone to get rid of the United States note.
All of that. Michael, for people who aren't familiar with whatreallyhappened.com, tell us really quickly about that.
Well, whatreallyhappened.com is a website. It's existed in various forms and under a couple of names for since 1994. And we've got a lot of readers around the world. And I started doing talk radio back in 2007, and as you mentioned at the top of the show, I have my own program Monday through Friday on the Genesis Communication Network.
Okay, we're going to come back and take some phone calls with you, Michael, in your final hour. Wow, lots going on, folks, so we'll come back. We'll take calls. By the way, don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Twitter. We send out information about the program every day, so make sure you're following us there, too. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment with your calls and Michael Rivero right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Michael Rivero with us as we talk about world issues, and we'll take your phone calls as well. Michael, how did you get involved in all this in terms of really looking at issues with a different way?
Well, it actually came about entirely by accident. Back in 1994, I was living in Southern California, in fact, in the Valley. Not far from your studios.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in the film industry, and I just happened to see the photograph that was leaked by the White House to Reuters News showing the hand of White House Deputy Counsel Vincent Foster supposedly right next to the gun with which he killed himself. Now, what I did in the motion picture industry was visual effects, and so it's my job to know what makes something look real or not.
Uh-huh.
And the instant I looked at that picture, I said, this is a fake. This is not real. There are too many things that should be there and are not. And I saved the image. I made a hard copy of it. And the next day, I went into this studio that I was doing a commercial with. And on our lunch break, I was showing this around. Now, this studio was in the same building as the CNN Hollywood division. And I remember very clearly these people from CNN listening very closely to me as I pointed out in the picture all the stuff that was wrong with it. And that night I started getting threatening phone calls.
Wow.
And my career in Hollywood simply evaporated. And since I suddenly had a lot of time on my hands, I kept on digging. And eventually I found documents, the FBI's own documents, showing that they were fraudulently manufacturing the testimony of Lisa Foster trying to claim that the gun found with the body belonged to him. Now, Vince Foster did have a gun that he had inherited from his father. It was a nickel-plated revolver. The FBI described it as silver-colored, but obviously the gun found with the body was dark-blued steel, almost black. And what happened is the Whitewater investigation was forced to look at that issue because so many people were saying it was so odd. And they basically took the FBI's statement that Lisa Foster recognized the silver gun and simply rewrote it to say Lisa Foster recognized the gun found with the body. And once I had that documentation, it was obvious there was some kind of a cover-up going on. And that was really the beginning. I had originally had all this on a subpage of my animation website, and eventually it split off onto its own. And, you know, my wife and I went through, you know, quite a rough period there because, you know, I was blacklisted out of Hollywood. We eventually had to leave Southern California. We lived in Washington State for a while, way out in the mountains, just to get away from people. But I kept the website going through various incarnations, TWA 800, and Saddam's nuclear weapons. And, of course, today it's a huge database of information. And it's led to the radio show. And along the way, I managed to sort of briefly revive my film career. But at this point, I'm really spending all of my time trying to prevent World War III.
Do you get along with Alex these days?
I haven't talked to him in a while. Of course, it was Alex who got me my first show on GCN back
in
2007.
Yeah.
So I'll always be grateful for that. He and I disagree on a couple of issues, but other than that,
happens. You know, people, you know, we don't agree on everything, Michael, and we are civil.
Yes.
You know, that's the important. And the important thing is you have your views, and we have ours, and people have theirs when they call in without getting muffled. I think we're headed for a disaster when people simply say, don't put him on. I don't agree with him.
Well, it's getting that way already.
I know.
We're seeing in the universities censorship. When I was a kid, universities were where you went to have a free expression of ideas and new thoughts, and today they've become the most rigid enforcers of the status quo.
Are you sensing that people are getting whacked out these days? I mean, really weird.
Well, certainly, there's a couple of factors. One, I think everybody, even if they don't consciously understand what's gone wrong, in their gut, they know something is not right with the country. They know something is not right with all of these wars. The other issue is prescription antidepressants have become a major product in the United States. Something like between 20 and 25% of Americans are taking these. And they have a long history of triggering very bizarre behavior.
Of course,
we know the more newsworthy cases, mass shootings and suicides. But there's research now showing that domestic violence has increased as these drugs have become more widely used. Police abuse, and police are higher users of these prescription antidepressants than the general population. We may have actually drugged ourselves into a state of wackoness in the name of a fast buck.
I think so, too. Okay, let's go to the phones because the hour will go quickly. We'll go to Jesse in Virginia, first-time caller. Hi, Jesse.
Hey, guys. You know, what I want to talk about was the North American Union.
All right.
That's a scary prospect, really. I mean, just to mix three countries together, you know. But it seems like the wars, the financial system, even Donald Trump coming into the president, you know, he's a businessman, you know. I mean, who better to deal with a financial crisis, you know? And with all this getting ready to happen, the North American Union seems like it's a savior. You know what I mean? So, like, they're just going to throw it at us as soon as everything starts going downhill.
Well, that's the plan. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, at this point, the rush toward a North American Union has stumbled rather badly because in order to lower all the borders, they have to reduce everybody in the United States and Canada down to the same standard of living as Mexico, and that has not worked out very well. As far as Donald Trump is concerned, I'm enjoying him immensely. I'd love to see him win the nomination and even the presidency compared to all the other people that we have. I am concerned because I see him as dangerously naive politically. Too much of what he's saying is based on what he's gotten from the TV news, and he can be led into a political trap. The other area in which he's naive is coming out of the world of business. He has a certain degree of trust for his counterparties in every transaction, and that is most assuredly not the reality in the world of politics. And in a lot of ways, I think Donald Trump is just as naive and unprepared for the presidency as Jimmy Carter was.
Ah, but look what happened to Carter. Look how that ended up. So why do you want Donald in there?
Well, I want Donald in there because he's not Hillary, and he's not Jeb Bush, and he's not any of these others.
Ah.
So
if another candidate came forward that you liked, maybe?
Maybe, but I haven't seen anybody on the horizon yet. One thing I do know is the White House is not an hereditary prize to be handed off between two dynastic ruling families from Bush
well,
to Clinton to Clinton to Bush.
It's not a kingdom, that's for sure.
Yes.
Let's go next to Bob in Monterey, California, wildcard line. Bob, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I'm the fellow that introduced you to Ed Grimsley.
Oh, okay. Many years ago. You're the guy responsible for this.
Yeah. Gone by quickly. I wanted to bring back into the fold some of the other issues that surrounded Kennedy's death, and one is water. And we've done a lot of work into the issues of water wars all over the world
mm-hmm.
now. And back in that era of Kennedy's administration, he was involved in NAWAPA, North American Water and Power Authority, in which he would have brought water down from Canada all the way down into Mexico and had water for everybody at reasonable prices, that all of the infrastructure would have been built back then in the 60s. And I think that was another reason that kind of put a nail on his coffin.
Interesting
take.
I think
he had other plans for water.
What do you think of that, Michael? I had not heard that.
I had not either, but we certainly know that modern corporations do not like life's necessities to be provided by the government because then they cannot be commoditized. We've seen the result of that out in California. They're dealing with a horrible drought, and yet companies like Nestle are still sucking those aquifers dry and then selling that water back to the people of California for $2 per plastic bottle. And the CEO of Nestle is on record as saying that water should not be a basic human right, that it should be commoditized and made, you know, bottled for profit by corporations. And so the ultimate aim of all of these corporations is that nothing is provided. You can't grow anything. You can't harvest anything. We still have, we have states in this country where you can't even collect the rain falling on your own property. And this is part of this rush toward, you know, ultimate fascism, where everything you need, possibly someday even the air itself, you will have to pay a fee for to some large corporation.
Let's go to Boulder, Colorado. I was just there yesterday. Teresa, hello.
Yeah, hi. Oh, what a great night. Michael, I want to bring up nuclear weapons and stuff.
Okay.
In 2005, either the U.S. and Israel or both, they managed to knock out the IR-1 centrifuges at Natanz in Iran. You know, they had a, they put a bug in there and they burned up all the centrifuges.
Okay, yeah, so you're talking about Stuxnet.
Back a long time. And in my opinion, as long as we have hackers, we'll never have a nuclear war, ever.
Never have one? Well, we could have an accidental launch. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think we can rule out a nuclear war because of the actions of hackers. What you're talking about is the Stuxnet virus that was created by the U.S. and Israel and deployed against Iran's centrifuges in order to wreck them. The problem is that Stuxnet broke into the wild and spread all across Asia, infecting these standard Siemens controllers that were used in ordinary factories. And in point of fact, Stuxnet was known to be infecting computers around the Fukushima power station when the quake and tsunami hit. And it's a matter of record that when the tsunami hit, the emergency systems at Fukushima, which use those Siemens controllers, weren't operating correctly. And I would really like to know if Stuxnet had in fact infected the Fukushima power station and turned what might have been a survivable disaster into a complete catastrophe.
I had an opportunity while I was in Boulder this weekend, Michael, taping our Beyond Belief television shows, to go by the home where little JonBenet Ramsey was killed in. And let me tell you something, that was an eerie feeling. Just looking at that house, it's a pretty house, just picturing that horror that occurred that night. God.
Well, this idea of forcing little kids to grow up to be adults very quickly, I think that's a crime. I think kids should be allowed to stay kids as long as they can, because growing up is a one-way street. I remember looking at the Ramseys and especially the wife on TV and just getting this really negative feeling from them.
A lot of people tell me that. A lot of people. Okay, let's go to Henry. Truck driving in New York now, east of the Rockies. Henry, you're on with Michael Rivero. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, Henry. Thank you.
So we're, you know, a lot of what we're talking about, or you guys are talking about, is conspiracy theories. What's the possibility that Illuminati might have some kind of an effect or influence on what's going on, even though it's supposed to theoretically be a dead secret society?
Well, in terms of what, though? Of course, they're always involved in something.
Well, you know, like what's going on with Hillary's emails and everything along those lines. I mean, you're talking about possible espionage. I mean, what if the Clinton administration has theoretically been involved with the Illuminati?
Well, they probably have been, but I think anything that's happened with Hillary's emails were a result of things that she did. I don't think anybody planted anything or forced her to do anything she did not want to do. Michael, whatever she did on her own.
Absolutely, no question about that. And you need to understand that people like Hillary would prefer it if you were off looking for an unreachable, unfindable bad guy on the other side of the world, whether it's the Bilderbergers or the Illuminati or the Secret Society of Fluffies or whatever it is, in order that you're not looking for the criminals who are operating right in front of your very eyes. And so you need to be very careful that Illuminati's are not being used as a false trail to lure you away into a pointless pursuit and lead you away from the people who really did the crime. Yes, whatever happened, whether it was just recklessness and stupidity on her part, or whether she was running a spy ring and selling American secrets for campaign cash, this is all Hillary's doing.
Are you still looking over your shoulder, Michael?
Not as much as I used to, but it got very tense there for a couple of times.
I bet. Let's go next to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Hello, Frank. Welcome.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
You too.
Mr. Rivero, could you briefly explain the Jonathan Pollard case? Because I'm torn whether to free him immediately or leave him in there until the last horn blows. And then the second question, the Kennedy assassination, if you could pick one person that it started in their mind and they convinced others in the conspiracy, because when I was 14 years old in high school, when the Kennedy assassination happened, and a few months later they learned that Lee Harvey Oswald was in the CIA, I said, this is conspiracy.
Well, let me start with your first part of it. I'm actually having a brain fade. All right, I'm going to talk about Kennedy.
Jonathan Pollard,
right. Jonathan Pollard was stealing U.S. nuclear secrets and selling them to Israel. Now, Israel turned around and traded those U.S. nuclear secrets to the Soviet Union in exchange for increased immigration quotas. Now, had the U.S. and the Soviet Union gone to nuclear war at that time, the U.S. would have lost. That was the scale of Pollard's betrayal. And I'm in agreement with all of those security experts who say Pollard should stay in prison for the life sentence that he was given. But Israel, of course, has always been trying to say he's, you know, a nice Jewish boy, bring him home. They've named streets after him. They see him as a national hero for stealing America's nuclear secrets. And by the way, some of our agents were exposed by him and presumably were killed. And it was a betrayal. Pollard was a U.S. citizen, and he felt more loyal to Israel than to the United States. Israel justified the spying by saying, well, you should have given us these secrets anyway. But then when you realize what Israel did with them, it was obviously very prudent not to be giving Israel these secrets. And I think Pollard should just stay there in prison for the rest of his life. In fact, if you remember the Rosenberg case, where they stole the secrets of the nuclear bomb and gave it to the Soviet Union, those two were given the death penalty.
That's right. Now back to his JFK question.
Now back to the JFK thing. For me, when I was young, I was very naive, trusting, innocent. I was 8 years old when Kennedy was killed. I was 11. And I sort of bought the official story all along up until Jim Garrison brought his lawsuit against Clay Shaw. And I had saved all the newspapers and magazines from the Kennedy assassination. And I dug one of them out, and in it was the photo taken by James Altgen at the moment when Kennedy grabs his throat. And you can see standing in the bookstore depository on the ground floor, Lee Harvey Oswald. And that picture has never been printed at that resolution ever since. And on another page, they had this shot showing how one bullet could have hit Kennedy and Connolly, and yet it's very obvious that picture was not taken from the book depository because the book depository is there on the right. That was the moment where I said, okay, we're being lied to.
You've heard the controversy that people believe that the driver shot Kennedy. I've looked at the videos. I can't see that, Mike.
I don't see that either. I think Kennedy was taken out by three shoot teams. One
triangular shoot.
Yeah, triangular shoot, one from the grassy knoll, one from somewhere in the book depository, not necessarily the sixth floor, and shot from behind from the Daltex building.
We've got Barbara now in Gardena, California, but we're going to have to get you when we come back, Barbara. Wow, the clock is ticking faster and faster. Michael, have you found that this is a fast year?
Yes, it is. And it seems to be getting faster.
It really, really is. I don't know how we can slow it down, but it just keeps rolling along. I mean, we're going into October in a couple weeks. It makes no sense. Stay with us. Welcome back. Michael Rivera with us. Your phone calls in our final segment. What's your next project, Michael? What are you up to?
Well, my next project is I'm working on a couple of books. One is called The Blueprint for the New America, because I do not advocate violent revolution or any kind of violence, but I think sooner or later, the current system's going to come down, And we, the American people, need to be ready to decide for ourselves what will rise in its place and not just sit back and wait for some carpetbagger to come on in and sell us the old system all over again in new wrappings. And so I'm working on that, and I'm doing a little more advertising work and computer animation and visual effects stuff, but 99% of my effort is focused on my website and my talk radio show over at GCN, because it does feel like we're at a very critical stage right now.
Well, and if people want to listen to you, how do they find you?
Well, I'm on the Genesis Communication Network Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time.
Okay, very good. So do you think Donald Trump could pick up the phone if elected president and talk to Vladimir Putin and say, Vlad, we got to work this out? Is he kind of a guy?
I think he'd make the call, but Trump really is not a person who seems to listen very much. If he's getting it, if he has advisors now, he's not listening to them because of that issue I raised before, where he seems very naive. Putin probably would not have a lot of respect for him, but then I don't think Putin has a lot of respect for anybody in the American political system. He's managed to outmaneuver them so brilliantly. But at this point, whoever is going to get into the White House is not going to be able to make significant changes unless we give them a Congress that will work with them. And getting on back to this fight over the Iran deal in Congress, I think a lot of Americans are just shocked to see how many members of Congress are out there championing the Israel's point of view on the Iran deal, Netanyahu's point of view on the Iran deal. They're seeing AIPAC spend $30 million on TV advertising trying to sway us. And I think Americans are really kind of fed up with the idea of a government trying to serve two masters.
Well, I've got to tell you, Michael, based on what I think I know, I'm not in favor of this Iran deal. I mean, I just think there's something afoot here. Now, I'm going to investigate these interpretations of what we think we're hearing. I think that's worthwhile. I've gotten some emails over the last several years from some Iranians who say they're not saying what you're hearing.
Yes.
So I'm going to look into that.
Remember, truth is the first casualty of war, and we have been in an undeclared state of war ever since Wesley Clark blew the lid off the cover-up back in 2003 and said there's this plan to conquer all the Middle East oil nations and bring them under U.S. control, ending with Iran in 2008. Obviously, we've succeeded in delaying them a little tiny bit. But, I mean, think back to all the lies you were told about Saddam Hussein, or lies about, torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah, I agree.
So you have to be very, very careful what you're fed in terms of trying to get you to demonize somebody. All the lies we're hearing about Putin these days, you know, Putin's responsible for the Syrian refugee crisis. Putin's responsible for human-caused global warming and so forth and so on.
All right. Donald Trump is in Dallas. He spoke before 20,000 cheering people today. Let's go to Jim, truck driving in Dallas right now. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, guys. Great show.
Good to have you.
Two questions real quick. One, first, back before I was a truck driver, I did security, and I learned through security. I was a security at a skyscraper in downtown Orlando. I had a surprise visitor. It was a prince from either Iran or Iraq, and he says he owned the building. And come to find out, that was true. Not only that, but after talking with him, which he was a nice guy, I learned that the majority of all skyscrapers in all major cities are owned by Middle Easterns. So I was wondering what you know about that. As well as my next question was, I believe, George, you had a guest that was talking about the detour signs in Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, that was orange detour, blue detour.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying about there are actually detours from military bases in which Hillary passed the bill to ensure that at least 250,000 Chinese and Russian troops are stationed in the U.S. in the events that martial law had to be declared. They need a third-party military to enforce that.
All right, I'll let Michael address that in a second. In terms of the prince, I would doubt he was a prince from Iran or Iraq, because I don't think they have princes there. Now, it most likely was either Saudi Arabia or the Emirates, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, something like that. Michael, what do you think?
Well, all of this goes back to the petrodollar deal, because World War II, saw the change from the pound sterling to the dollar as the global trade and banking currency. That was Roosevelt's price to Winston Churchill to bring the U.S. in, was the pound sterling would step down and the dollar would take over as the global trade and banking currency. And all of this was worked out at the Bretton Woods Conference in New Hampshire. And it was all working really well until all of a sudden other countries realized the U.S., in particular the Federal Reserve, were overprinting those paper dollars. So when France decided they wanted to return their dollars for their gold equivalent at $35 an ounce, Richard Nixon took a look in Fort Knox and realized we had nowhere near as much gold to back all those paper dollars, and he closed the gold window. It was called the Nixon shock. And at that point, other countries started saying, well, maybe we don't need to take our commerce through the U.S. dollar. And so they came up with what they called the petrodollar deal. The U.S. went to all the oil-producing nations in the Middle East and said, if you will sell your oil only for the U.S. dollars and invest those dollars in the United States, we will use our military to guarantee your safety. And so these countries like Saudi Arabia sell their oil for the dollar. They take the dollars and they invest them in the United States in real estate, business ventures, treasury bonds. And the deal has been very lucrative for the Middle East all this time. And as a result, yes, Middle Eastern oil families do own a lot of property here in the United States of America.
Well, they sure do. They sure do. What do you hear about Jade Helm? Anything?
So far, Jade Helm, for all the dire warnings about door-to-door gun confiscation, it seems to be just a training exercise. The aspect of it that was most alarming to me was it seems to signal a change in training doctrine for the U.S. military, because the focus has always been on counterinsurgency for like the last 10 years. And Jade Helm seems to be an attempt to sort of refocus military training on open field, wide front, you know, war against a military peer, rather than counterinsurgency and counterterror. And Jade Helm, I think, is the beginning of training up the U.S. Army for a major confrontation with Russia or China.
Let's go to Gardena, California. It's Barbara's turn west of the Rockies. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, I want to get back to Libya and Hillary Clinton's email.
All right.
Okay, there was reports, I saw both of them, by Nick Robertson and Christian Amanpour, from Libya, and they both reported that Colonel Gaddafi was not killing his citizens. And when it was told to Hillary Clinton, what she said was, we had to continue the war or bombing Libya just in case he decided to. Now, I don't believe that that's the reason why the U.S. decided to destroy Libya and murder Gaddafi.
No, it isn't.
Okay, and the other thing is what happened to Libya's gold stores. And the other thing is, I was concerned about was the suspension of the sanctions for the use of child soldiers during that war. And the last thing I was concerned about was Representative Walter Fauntleroy was there. And he reported seeing NATO, or was it Danish troops in particular, on the ground in Libya. And since then, a warrant has been issued for his arrest for some kind of financial fraud or whatever. I want to know if the report that Hillary Clinton okayed the killing of Representative Fauntleroy while he was in Libya is true.
Okay, well, let me back up here and give you a little bit of overview. As I mentioned, the U.S. financial system has become very dependent on the dollar hegemony around the world, because dollars have to be borrowed at interest, or people have to bring us real manufactured goods and produce to get those pieces of ink and paper before they can do cross-border trade or buy petroleum products and various other raw materials. The U.S. has protected that monopoly with force of arms. In 2002, Saddam Hussein got permission from the United Nations to sell Iraq's oil for the euro. 1 year later, the U.S. invades, screaming he's got nuclear weapons of mass destruction. They lynch Saddam Hussein and put Iraq's oil back on the global market, but only for the U.S. dollar. Down in Libya, Gaddafi was doing wonderful things, building this huge waterworks, greening up Libya. He shut down their private central bank and instituted a state bank and a value-based currency, the gold dinar. Then he announced to the world that Libya's oil was for sale, but only for the gold dinar. So the U.S. goes in with their allies, they kill Gaddafi, they put in a new private central bank, the gold for the gold dinar vanished, nobody really knows where it went to, and Libya's oil is back for sale on the world market only for the U.S. dollar. That's really the motive behind all of these wars is keeping the world dependent on the U.S. dollar, trying to find some way to destroy the competition coming from the ruble and the yuan, and trying to basically conquer all the resource-rich areas of the world so that those resources trade only for the U.S. dollar.
And the former congressman, Fauntleroy, he's still alive, I think, and he pled guilty to some financial impropriety. So I don't know where she was headed there.
Well, something that you do need to understand, the reason for the whole investigation into the email server began with questions about the attack on the consulate at Benghazi.
Right.
And what is starting to emerge is there was a gun-running operation going from Libya through that consulate to arm al-Qaeda and ISIS in Syria. Now, technically, we've been told ISIS and al-Qaeda are our enemies in the war on terror, and yet somebody issued the order to send them weapons. Now, if Hillary did this all on her own, it qualifies as an act of treason. I don't think she did it on her own. I think she was ordered by the president, who will never admit to that, because it would basically be admitting the entire war on terror is a fake if, in fact, we're arming and supporting these people that are presented to us as a terror threat we should all be afraid of. So you can see how murky it all gets. And I think at the same time, Obama decided, since they were going to go into the consulate in Benghazi and burn it down to erase the paper trail, they wanted to stage a terror attack and a hostage crisis to steal the media focus back from Mitt Romney, because at that time Romney was leading slightly in the polls, and I think they figured we'll have the terrorists take over the consulate, they'll hold the ambassador hostage, they'll burn it all down, we'll send in the SEAL team, and Obama would look like a hero, that he wasn't another Jimmy Carter with the Iranian hostage crisis. And I think things just got out of control. I think ordinary Libyans heard the gunfire and just piled on in, and it turned into a riot during which the ambassador and three others were killed. And they've been trying to cover up for it ever since, first of all by blaming this non-existent Mohammed-bashing movie. And one of the emails that has surfaced from Hillary's server is her being told the day after the attack on the consulate, this was an act of terror, they know the group who did it. And still the official story coming out was, oh, it was just a riot because of this movie that angered the Muslims because it insulted Mohammed. But all that ever existed of that movie was a hastily edited trailer put together out of another movie entirely and then overdubbed.
Let's go to some more final calls here. Georgetown, Kentucky, Craig Stern on Coast to Coast on the Wild Card Line. Craig, good morning.
Howdy there.
Hi.
I'm pretty sure JFK didn't get assassinated by a grassy knoll, nor in a hotel. I'm pretty sure he got assassinated by a drone.
A drone? I don't think we had drones then.
Well, back then, you don't know, because JFK was trying to get the technology out of there, but he got assassinated, unfortunately, by the same thing he was trying to stop.
Well, the one thing I think we're pretty sure is he didn't get killed by Lee Harvey Oswald, or definitely not a lone gunman, to be sure. I'm not even sure Oswald knew what was going on, Michael.
I don't think he did. I think Oliver Stone got really close to the situation where Oswald knew he was part of the plan but didn't realize he was the patsy until it was too late. And even the House Select Committee on Assassinations was forced to conclude there were more than one shooter in Dealey Plaza, and therefore it was a conspiracy.
Karen in Doyle, California now. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, I got a real quick question for you. When might you be coming to the Reno area? And then I have a comment.
Okay, Reno, I don't know. I might try to get up to an Ed Dames training on remote viewing, but it's not set yet.
Oh, that would be awesome, because I'm like, I live in Doyle, California, but I'm on the border, and I live 25 minutes from downtown Reno.
Perfect.
And my other comment was about people being whacked out. There is so much methamphetamine and heroin coming through the border. I live in such a small area, and it's like 2 out of 10 people that aren't using it.
Horrible.
And they get, I mean, they absolutely get crazy.
Oh, there's no doubt. Do you ever see Karen Breaking Bad when it was on?
No, I heard about it.
It's all about methamphetamine. All about that.
I've seen it in real life, and it's just horrible. And then on the psychotropics, My daughter was on like seven different kinds in 2009, and she did the weirdest things. She ended up going to jail on them, on a misdemeanor, thank God. And
how's she doing now?
She's doing well. She's dropped down to two different things that are helping her well. She was verbally abused and mentally abused by her own uncle, but she is causing, you know, she is going the route of psychology. And okay. She had to go to a Social Security hearing, and the woman says, "Why aren't you taking more of these?" And she told her, "I am not being forced and taking all these different psychotropics."
Now, well, that's good. If she could get them off all of them, that would be great, but make sure it's done under a doctor's supervision. Michael, only have a few more minutes left here. When you put together what really happened many, many years ago, and like you say, I mean, you were in the film industry, you were a production person, but somewhere along the line, you were always into this. I got to believe that.
Well, I've always been a sucker for the truth and digging out the facts. And like I said, I have the instincts of an archivist because I had collected and saved all the newspaper articles and magazines from the Kennedy assassination. So there was always a curiosity there. And before I was in the film industry, I was with NASA, so I've got a grounding in the sciences as well. And maybe that's one of the reasons why when the government tries a piece of propaganda, it'll basically leap out at me as, hey, this can't possibly work the way they're describing it. But at no point in my life prior to 1994 did I sit down and say, I think I'm going to throw away a booming career in the film industry to become a truth activist. It just sort of happened, and, you know, here we are 21 years later, and still fighting the same fight and really trying to stop this Third World War before it reaches the nuclear stage.
Okay, you're really not a prophecy person, but I'm going to ask you to take a stab at some things here really quickly. If the election were held today, the primary, Democratic primary, who would get the nomination?
I think Bernie Sanders would get it, assuming that Biden does not step in.
Republican?
Trump.
Economy over the next 3 months?
Going to continue to decline because the whole central banking scheme is a Ponzi scheme. It piles up more debt than money to pay that debt, and eventually it must collapse.
Heavy war, maybe a third world war.
I think we're already in the third world war. I think future history books are going to look at the autumn of 2015 as already being into the war. We're missing the big bang where everybody says, oh, yes, it's a world war, but look how many conflicts we've got going. Technically, we've got two battlefronts on two different continents under U.S. military doctrine. That is a world war.
A major attack within the United States, within the United States. I'm not going to necessarily say terrorist-related, but something big.
More than likely a false flag attack to try and revive the war fever, but considering how the official story of 9/11 and the Boston Marathon and the rest have crumbled, anybody trying that, they really got to be desperate to try in something like that, but it's certainly possible.
All right, track Michael Rivera by going to his website, whatreallyhappened.com. We will be back in a moment with Dr. Michael Sala, Corey Good. Insiders reveal the secret space programs and extraterrestrial alliance.